Congratulations. You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Maysoon Wazwaz.
Okay, we're back on track. We have our proper recording equipment. We're in a room inside of a building, finally.
Yes, we have a great view. It's perfect. It's almost just like being at SFMOMA again.
Exactly.
But better.
Okay, here's some updates that we were asked to relay to the public.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I never checked the email.
Control Shift is looking for a new member. If you need a studio and you want to have a studio in Oakland, they have an open application. You can go and check it out. ControlShiftCollective.com. That's CTRLSHFT Collective, spelled the usual way. Or you can also email them info@ControlShift.com. Just a little background. Who is Control Shift? Control Shift is an all-woman / gender nonconforming artist collective in Oakland, California, bringing art and critical engagement to the public and fostering emerging artists in the Bay Area. They have an exhibition space, as you probably know, 12 artist studios, and a place to support conversation. The studio rent is between $222 and $380. That's pretty fucking good.
So are they very similar to Real Time and Space?
I think they are looking for a little bit more engagement than we do at RTS.
Mm-hmm.
RTS is kind of like, if you just want a studio, you want to clock in, clock out, not do much else.
Fine.
That's fine.
Yeah. This is more of a collaborative where you're really kind of programming the space and...
Yeah, like, so the application consists of, like, tell us about yourself and your practice. What does being part of a collective mean to you, and what would you bring to the collective?
Mm-hmm.
Describe any organizing or collective experience you've had. Yeah, so they do everything together.
Yeah.
RTS, there's committees, but you can choose to opt out and not be on.
Yeah, it's not mandatory.
Yeah.
Royal Nantucket Gallery is looking for another co-director.
They're looking for a fourth. Sarah Thibault has... retired.
What happened?
I think it was just a lot. You know, yeah. She has a full-time job and her own art practice.
Yeah.
And she runs Painting Salon.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So she has
with
lots of going
Kate
on.
Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
So they're looking for a new person. So go check that out. I'll have a link to all this stuff in the underworld. But lots of new opportunities out there for people.
That's great.
Another announcement, Living Room Light Exchange is publishing its second book.
Oh, great.
State Change, Publication 2. The book features commissions of new works from new media artists, writers, and media theorists in the greater San Francisco Bay Area. There's an introduction by Rick Prelinger. It's a limited edition of 200 books. It's 140 pages colored, each containing a bookmark of Fuck Trump protest stickers by Jenny O'Dell.
Oh, yeah. I'm familiar with this.
Mm-hmm. The launch of this book was made possible by an alternative exposure grant. If you want more information about that, you can email livingroomlightexchange@gmail.com, and I'll have a link also to all that in the underworld. Chucha Santa Maria and Russell Butler are playing at Southern Exposure on this Saturday, April 29th. Doors open at 7, sliding scale donation at the door, $10 to $20.
Yeah, I went to a performance there this past Thursday.
How was it?
This artist named Danishta. It was great.
Okay, Lizzie Brooks also and Radka Pulliam have a screening at Other Cinema also on Saturday, May 6th.
You gotta love Other Cinema.
At ATA 992 Valencia Street. The project is called Temporal Cities. It's a public art project that examines the experience of living in San Francisco's Tenderloin neighborhood through the stories of its residents.
Mm.
Go check it out. There's going to be slides, digital video, other thing. Multi-sensory experience.
This is the last weekend of 100 Days Action. Can you believe it? We're like hitting days. The 100-day mark. So there's a bunch of events coming up on both Saturday and Sunday that I want to encourage every one of you to go to. Something, go to something. Just take part for one moment.
A flurry of activity.
So on Saturday, both Saturday and Sunday, we'll have 100 Day Action trainers at YBCA in our 24-hour resistance gym. You can come check that out if you're curious about what the hell that means. 12 to 4 on Saturday, 12 to 2 on Sunday. Also on Saturday from, I believe, 2 to 4, there will be a poetry reading taking place in Clarion Alley on Valencia between 17th and 18th Streets. Beautiful alley full of murals, murals done by local artists. And then later on Saturday evening, Saturday night, we're having what we're calling our No Band Dance Party, which is a dance party featuring DJs and music from the seven countries on the travel ban, aka the Muslim ban. So that will be super fun. That's at Gray Area over on Mission Street, and I believe 21st.
Mm-hmm. You can't miss it.
Can't right miss there. It. But that's sort of basically our big closing out party, which will be super fun. Come dance with us. Come support.
Then it's like, what?
Then
what?
And then Sunday. Is that what you mean?
Then it becomes the 558 days action project.
I know. I mean, that's a thing. There's, it's like forever and ever. Well, not forever and ever. Next 4 years, potentially. So.
Oh, then it's the 1,286 days action.
Yeah. I think we're going to disband, actually. So that's cool. But let me quickly also tell you, and this is too much, but Sunday, the events happening on Sunday I'm super excited about. One of them is with Amanda Eicher and Cara Levine. They have a project called This Is Not a Gun, where they will be making, with participants in the project, will be making ceramic objects that have been mistaken for guns. So anywhere from cell phones to candy bars to pop, you know, soda cans, whatever. And then also sort of leading a conversation around police violence in the community. And that takes place in the Tenderloin Museum from 11 to 2. And then the final event for us from 2 to 4 on Sunday, this Sunday, is the anti-Trump aerobics with Liat Berdugo at Alley Cat Books. So work it out, sweat it out, and then get back to work.
The 100 days has been, I mean, the days, not the project.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
Have been both better and worse than I expected.
Yes. There have been some successes and there have some, like, been like some major fallouts.
Like, you tried to do a lot of terrible things that I didn't think were more pomp than reality.
Yeah.
But he went ahead and gave it his shot. But a lot of those things were foiled.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's been... It's interesting, but
not to be reductive about the, like, graveness of a lot of things
yeah,
they
the
have
seriousness
done.
Of, yeah. Well, and also the graveness of, like, the potential for major destruction in the world. You
oh
know, it's
my
like,
God.
Don't give up. Don't think it's over, because it's not. I mean, I think he's still going to keep pushing for the most ridiculous, horrible things. And so,
yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know who else was speaking of terrible things last night?
Tell me.
P.S. We're recording on Wednesday. Donna Haraway gave a talk at SFAI on her book, Staying with the Trouble, Making Kin in the Cthulhu Scene. Although I think she doesn't ever pronounce the C in Cthulhu Scene. Anyhow, it was fucking mind-blowing how she would jump from, like, real scientific fact to this, like, fucking sci-fi story that's also in the book. She showed, like, the table of contents at the beginning, and it wasn't totally clear to me if, like, the whole book is the story that she was talking about, where people, like, give birth but then their baby's like a symbiotic creature with endangered migratory animals.
Whoa.
And there's, like, a baby that's like a monarch butterfly, and those are called the Camilles, and that character's name is called Camille too, and, like, all this stuff. It blew my mind. Some of it I didn't completely understand. Yes.
Can you just give a listeners and me a little background? I don't know her. It seemed like it was a packed audience. I watched part of this live stream from home, probably only the first 30 minutes, and was like the first part before she started reading her paper. I was totally down with it and was understanding. Uh-huh. And then I just got really fucking lost. But she's clearly a brilliant woman. But
it's like a sci-fi narrative
story. Is she a fiction writer? Like, what's her, who is she?
She is a professor emerita from the Feminist Studies Department and the History of Consciousness Department at UC Santa Cruz.
Okay.
So I don't know, like, what group of, like, what field you would put her in.
Right.
She's a scholar of science and technology, feminism, postmodernism, like, all kinds. But she studied, like, histories of science, So like she's got she's drawing from like a whole bunch of different.
I mean, she was incredible. Just hearing her talk, I was just blown away by her like depth of knowledge and the way she could, like you were saying, move through these different worlds. Or
I think her like
real worlds and fake worlds or made up kind of ideas that related to the real.
Mm-hmm. I think her like seminal work was called A Cyborg Manifesto that was published in 1985.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's kind of how she like broke onto the scene.
Yeah.
I remember when Coco Fusco came into that talk at YBCA a couple of years ago where she was Dr. Zira from Planet of the Apes. She opened it up with like a video message from Donna Haraway.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. Oh, awesome. That was kind of like, it was funny because I didn't know that much about Donna Haraway. I mean, except for these like associations last night when the talk started. But then as she got into it, I was like, God, this really makes sense with like Coco Fusco and like all these like Lynn Hirschman and all these artists that are talking about like sci-fi, cybernetics and like all this weird futuristic, apocalyptic, you know, digital turmoil.
Yeah. No, interesting.
I want to look into a book she talked about called The Tree Snail Manifesto. I'm really into snails.
The Tree Snail Manifesto?
The Tree Snail Manifesto. Mm-hmm. She talked about speculative fiction, science fiction, and speculative fabulation.
Mm-hmm. All the SFs.
Yeah.
There were like five or seven SFs.
String figures. She was getting into this whole thing about string sci-fact. Figures. Like Cat's Cradle, like the formations you make with playing string games. Mm-hmm. I think all these things are in her book, I'm sure. And I'm sure once you get it all down on paper, you kind of can grasp it a little bit more. But
I definitely want to read it.
I think one concrete thing that seemed like a takeaway from the evening was she was talking about make kin, not babies. Like about kind of organizing and making community with the people that are here rather than like blasting more babies out. Cause I think a big thing that she's concerned with is like population explosion.
Yeah.
And she said that's kind of a controversial issue on the left that people kind of don't want to talk about it because of obviously the breakdown of like race and class that like, you know, it can get kind of eugenicsy when you talk about trying to limit the population and like the horrific things that have happened in countries where they tried it. Yeah. So I think it's a touchy subject, but she was talking about being born in the 1950s when there were 2 billion people on the earth. And now there's like coming up on 8 billion. And that's pretty fucking outrageous.
Yeah.
So I think it was interesting because she
had something about 2100?
2100, there will be 11 billion people. Yeah,
she had
projected.
Some big statistics out there.
Yeah, unless they're, if we make it to there.
If we make it. We'll make it to there.
Not if there's a nuclear holocaust.
That's true.
Not if there's like mega storms.
I weirdly, for some reason, I immediately thought of like, the sun's not due to explode by then.
Oh, that's the last of our worries.
That is truly the last of our worries at this point. But it's like the sun still has a while because
it's got millions of years.
Those are the weird, crazy, like worrisome things I think about, which are like so the not like irrational for me in my life.
I
will never be
anywhere
near that.
Happen.
You know.
Point is, Maysoon. It just was really fascinating. It brought up a lot of ideas in my mind about the power of narrative and like the power of fantasy to like make people relate to reality.
Nice.
And also, like the finding a road between like hope and like optimism and like defeatism and nihilism, that neither of those are really a realistic like approach to the world. What? Anyhow, during the Q&A, some fucking guy.
I almost should fast forward to the Q&A.
Every time at SFAI. I want to also say that the event I thought was run flawlessly. Mm. I got to sneak in early because I'm teaching there. So I got a good seat. So I have extra nothing to complain about. But also they started on time. Even though there was shit tons of extra people that
they
need to crowd in there. People
like
squeezed in.
Sitting on the stairs.
It started on time. The introduction was concise.
I loved that woman who introduced
Nicole Archer.
Yeah.
She's awesome.
She seems so great. I'm like, I love her. I want to.
She ran the symposium that happened last summer. She teaches there at the VCS or whatever they call it. And it was all, and the Q&A was run efficiently, even though there was a questioner that did two questions. So they're like, okay, we have 15 minutes for questions, which I'm like, fuck yeah, you have 15 minutes for questions. Keep it tight. And this dude up in the back is like, well, are you going to talk about H.P. Lovecraft? And she's like, actually, this has nothing to do with that. Like, even Cthulhu, like, that is from a whole thing before H.P. Lovecraft, mm-hmm. having to do with Medusa and shit. And so, fuck you. And everybody clapped and cheered. And then the guy was like, I mean, she didn't say it. She wasn't. No, she wasn't very, saying fuck you, very, I'm sure. Hospitable.
Yeah.
And then the guy up there was like, okay, and then my second question is meow, meow, meow. And he was like kind of condescending. And Monique Jenkinson from Phonique.
Yeah.
She was like, is this a question?
She's like, we have 15 minutes here, people. Straight up, let's go. Him.
Oh my God. It was star. The audience was star studded. Keith Hennessy, Monique Jenkinson, Brontez Purnell was Ooh. There. Fucking all the stars of stage and screen.
San Francisco stage and screen. Yeah.
So
that's awesome.
Yeah. She brought it all out. She was also wearing a very charming bolo tie and a very interesting belt buckle.
Listeners, if you want to hear this lecture, it is probably still on. Yeah,
we'll have a link to it on the Underworld if I can.
I don't know if SFAI has it or if it's still. I found it on Facebook, on the Facebook feed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. Good because they're not always great about taping these things.
Yeah, I'm glad they managed that one.
Got a question from Roby. I'm gonna say Roby, and I really hope that I am not pronouncing your name incorrectly.
We apologize if we are.
Something I often daydream about is opening up a gallery space and how I would run it. Do you ever do the same? How would you describe your own dream space?
Ooh, good hope question, this scratches
Roby. Your question itch. Because remember we asked for 100 listener questions?
Yes.
Okay, Mason, go ahead.
I do not ever dream about opening my own space.
Me either. Only sounds like hell.
Sounds like hell. And it's primarily, Roby, all power to you. Do it. I support you most 100%. Definitely. But I've worked in small nonprofit spaces where it is just really, really hard work.
It's a labor of love.
Labor of love. And hard work is important. I completely am for that. But I think if you want that to be your 100%, the thing you do, you work, live, dream, sleep, eat that, I think that's great. But
if you don't want to have children, yeah, and you want this to be your child.
You don't want a relationship with a human being.
Yep.
Those kinds of things. I just, you know, and I think maybe things have gotten easier. There's a lot of small spaces that have opened, and you know, maybe they're surviving in a different way than I knew.
Where
people aren't just
crying themselves to sleep.
Where people aren't just crying all the time.
Or early morning.
Yeah. I do think it's a ton of work no matter what. And so just know that going into it. Just expect to be awake.
Okay, let's go back into dream world though, Maysoon. What if you had all the money in the world and you could get staff and you could, like, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Have preparators and, like, you know, if it wasn't such a grind.
Would that be boring?
You
know what I mean?
You like the struggle.
I don't necessarily like, I do like, not the struggle, but there's something about the sort of creative, chaotic sort of mess that you get into sometimes that's exciting. It makes everything fresh and new. Uh-huh. Like every exhibition or every program you're doing is like, oh God, I have to do this again. And then you're figuring out a new problem to solve, which I... Uh-huh. Always appreciate
it. So you refuse to answer the question.
I still would never open a space.
But if you were going to have your dream space, what would it be? What would you put in there?
A long time ago, I don't feel this way anymore, but a long time ago, I really did want to open, I wanted to open a performance space specifically that would include everything from like performance art to like straight sort of dance performances that was in like a, not in a theater type space, more of a cafe type space, so sort of super informal performance space, but
so like a performance space cafe.
I think at the time that's what I was thinking, because I was sort of like, well, how, I think I was like, how will I support this space? How do I pay for the artists? I have to like make some kind of money somehow. Not that any of that makes any money.
Right.
I don't remember. I think it was, yeah. I think that's what I was thinking back in the day. No longer, I sort of no longer would want to do that particular, that particular model. I think I really like the model of the more of the like festival model. Like I think of TBA, time-based arts, or PICA's TBA festival, where they spend, I mean, they have other...
The Portland Institute of Contemporary Art.
Yeah, they have other events and programs that happen throughout the year, but it seems like their hallmark, their, you know, major event that happens every year is the time-based arts festival, which happens over the course of, what, almost 2 weeks? Like a week and a half, 2 weekends. And they just spend all of their time...
It's the whole week, though, and they have visual art, too. Like
no, I know they have everything, but it seems like they really spend a chunk of their time kind of planning for that.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I think that that model would maybe be more interesting to me in the way that I like to work, which is kind of like all at once.
So what would you put in there?
What would I put in there?
Yeah.
Well, do some performance stuff. Kinds. All kinds.
Whatever.
Probably not much music.
Okay. Well, my dream space would be like so. I would have like some kind of mural or outside thing, and it would change every month also.
Every month? No. Uh-huh.
Yep. And we'd, well, because we have infinite money.
Oh, right. Infinite money. Okay.
So we'd have, I'd have that change every month, and you'd be like, where's the building? It's mysterious. And then somebody would cover the outside with mirrors one time or something, and you'd be like, what the fuck? And then the neighbors would be like, the sun's shining crazy into my eyes. We're calling the police.
And then you just change it out.
And I'd be like, we have a right to do on our building. JK, I don't want to blind
anyone.
Don't
be a jerk.
What about like some black mirrors, like some dark, you know what I'm saying?
Okay. Why don't you make a three-way, what is it called? A
two-way glass.
A two-way glass wall.
Or whatever. Okay, there's that. They're so going to be doing shit outside. There's going to be all kinds. We're going to bring people in from out of town. We're going to have shows that last 3 months long.
Thank fucking God.
Hell yeah.
You know, I was just talking about...
performance and... we're going to have a above space that's kind of like suspended.
Do you mean
down.
Above ground or below ground?
Like what an above above where the gallery is. Like there's going to be a weird suspended room.
And that's for all the performing arts?
That's where the performances are going to be. There's going to be a lot of seating. There's going to be tons of seating.
But not too much seating.
And maybe like a ride that you ride to take you to
maybe
look at
slide.
The art. I'm thinking more like a monorail or something.
Or like a chair. Remember those chairs that used to go down this long stairwells?
I'm thinking like the train at the zoo. Like a small train that will be on a track that takes you around
elevator?
To look at the art.
Oh.
Oh,
what? Maybe, you're going to be on the train
no glass
to see the art?
Elevator. That's too confusing. Yep. Or like a ski lift.
People aren't allowed to walk.
No, because they'll get hit by the train.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh. This sounds a little bit intense.
Yep.
Okay.
That's what I want.
That's what you want. I got it. Interesting. Will there be an underground space? Or below?
No.
No, not at all.
Maybe. Maybe that'll be like a studio space, like how the lab is like giving somebody like, you know, keys to the place. To be doing a thing and they pay a salary. I would do that too. But I kind of would want it to be a satellite thing where my organization, which is going to be called Gallery Archiminko, is going to be, or like Archiminko Project Space or whatever. But no one gets any tax breaks.
Everyone gets tax breaks in this fake world of yours, or in this dream world of yours.
Everyone gets tax breaks.
Is this a dream world or is this a world where you have all the money you need?
It's a dream world.
Dream world. So in dream world, there aren't taxes.
And magnets. There'd be a lot of focused magnets. There'd be one
magnets.
Show every year that was purely focused on magnets.
Science, like what? Magnets?
Like artists doing work about magnets.
Like magnetic clothing?
Any kind.
Magnetic
whatever
paint.
Magnet project you're working on, we'll take it into consideration.
I love it.
We'll also have a re-granting program. And educational department, but that's going to be in a separate building.
Separate building completely.
Like maybe there's a breezeway.
You want to keep the kids away from the art.
There's a breezeway. Okay, anyhow.
Will the education space have its own exhibition space
and
as
there'll
well?
Be glass blowing.
Oh, glass blowing sounds awesome. Have with you magnets. Ever done that?
With no, magnets. I'm terrified. I took a glass kiln Wait, cast.
Why are you terrified of that?
Because of fucking you're blowing into molten fucking glass. Yeah. No, thank you.
Sounds awesome.
I got hurt in glass kiln casting, and that's not even dangerous. You know what I mean? Okay, anyhow, that's my dream space. I feel like I really answered that question.
I think you did a good job.
Pat on the back for me.
When did you read that question?
Well, I didn't think about it, though, until right now. Maysoon, did it sound like I thought about that answer?
A little bit, yeah. Specifically the the trolley.
Thank you.
The train.
That I have thought about. Because it's like, okay, for instance, today I went to the press preview at the Contemporary Jewish Museum.
On Wednesday.
Uh-huh. And I'll just say that Roz Chast has a show there, and I love it, and I recommend it. And I love her. And she's left-handed.
Hmm. Can you give me the 1-2 on
Well,
why
you know, Roz Chast is a illustrator for The New Yorker, and she's also a comic book artist. She did a comic book called Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant, which was kind of about her parents, taking care of her parents as they kind of
were aging.
Got older mm-hmm. and died. And she's done over 1,000 cartoons for The New Yorker. And she's a woman cartoonist, and I think that's fucking badass. And a lot of her work touches on, like, her childhood as the only child in Brooklyn and her weird older parents. They were, like, in their 40s when they had her, and just her weird ass. She's got birds. She's weird. And I relate to that. I think
Was
most
she there?
Cartoonists are. Yeah. Uh-huh. And Rennie Pritikin talked to her, and I have never seen him in real life.
Oh.
He's so cute.
He's very sweet. He's a very sweet man.
They were sitting in, you know, little like Eames chair, fakey kind of
Was
Eames
there like
chairs.
A conversation or something?
Uh-huh. Just for like 15 minutes. And he knocked over the water bottles, but they were close, so it was fine. And Phew. She pulled out a tissue, and I very related to both
Did
of them.
Did she cry?
No. She was like blowing her nose. And I was like, these are my people
These
right
are
here.
Your people.
Yeah.
Maybe you're Jewish. Actually, I don't know if Rennie is Jewish, to tell you the truth.
Oh, really?
I don't know. I mean.
Anyhow, there was a great spread of food.
Yes.
We got to go to this shit, man. We got to start
it.
Going to
I
all these
I didn't realize there was
previews.
I didn't realize we had an email.
There's a
I
full
don't...
quiche, full little quiches. You could take a whole quiche. I'm sure there was a lot of food left over. And they were giving out free thumb drives with a press kit on it, but I bet you could use this for whatever you want.
Oh, of course.
But the funny thing is, I didn't realize how fancy it was going to be. I think I was also one of the youngest people there.
That's okay.
And I straight up
Sarah
have...
Sarah Hotchkiss was there. She's pretty
no,
young.
No, she wasn't.
Oh, I thought she
I was.
I was
texting her.
Oh, I see.
And point is, I have mud on me. I look like shit. I smell bad, probably.
Yeah,
and
no, don't use
there
your
were
smell
people
bad
in suits and gowns and fully coiffed.
In the middle of the fucking day?
Okay, maybe not gowns.
They were just like made up.
Yeah, they were looking pro-fish.
That's
and like the director of the museum came out. It was bonkers.
Do we need to go on a clothing purchasing spree with you for your press interviews?
No, thank you.
Okay.
Anyhow, the reason I bring this up is because of my dream space. We'll have our ski lift that takes you through. And especially in shows like this where it's a ton of small work with a lot of text because it's a lot of like originals of comic
So you
want to
be like sitting there.
I need a
have
little
some
like
time.
A segue that you can sit on. JK.
What the fuck?
Like a rascal scooter. Just kidding. Just
on.
Kidding. But I went and saw Robert Crumb had an exhibition of his illustrated like Bible, like the Book of Genesis
yes.
illustrated, and that is so much text and
they
so
that at
many tiny drawings. I saw it when
so
I lived
good.
In Portland, and it's just like that is the whole point of comic books is you can put it in your backpack, take it wherever you want, sit it in, you know, hold it in your lap,
read
and
it.
Read it,
get comfortable, you know? Get cozy with it.
Yeah, it's a book. So seeing a book. Dissect
on a
you
wall
know, deconstructed and on a wall it's just you probably aren't going to read all of it
do you
but
feel like there's
I
a better way to present that kind of material in a
I
gallery setting
I don't know if there is a better way actually I think it's just kind of like read I mean I feel like a little bit it's kind of up to the viewer like read the book already I bet a lot of people that are going to be interested and go to the show
have
like
have
read
it.
A lot of her comics
yeah.
already hopefully
yeah.
and then I think then the part that I think is valuable to the viewer is being able to see up close, like the details of how she actually constructs the page.
Yeah, that's cool.
And one really striking thing to me was like all her, the like single panel cartoons she had, you couldn't see like a pencil line or like an erase thing.
And it was the original drawing.
She's fucking done so many of these. I think she's just like fucking
she's solid.
Pro as fuck. And she's just like, boom, I made it. And then the comic book pages, the more personal, like memoir work, there's a lot of like cutouts, like pasting them back in, whiting out things, like seeing that there's a lot more like back and forth kind of agonizing over the layouts and the pages. And yeah. I thought that's the, to me, always what's the cool thing. Like if you go to the Cartoon Art Museum or any of these places, seeing work you're already familiar with, but really being able to like dive deep and
yeah.
see yeah. the details of how they're made. Because it's such a laborious
that she would
activity.
Do cutouts as like, so like that was like her editorial process for the
yeah,
book?
Where maybe she like had an original, I have to go back and really look, but maybe she had like a page, an original page, and then would do a panel and be like, oh, I don't really like how this turned out. And then she'd do it on a separate piece of paper and paste it on. Oh. Onto the original page.
Interesting. As opposed to just redrawing the original page.
Well, it's like all watercolored and stuff. So, you know, it's not, yeah. she wouldn't like be able to erase it.
Right.
Yeah. So amazing drawings. There's a little video in the back of her with her weird birds. They have a lot of references to other lady comic book artists. So that's nice for people that want to do a deeper dive on stuff. I also think one benefit is like also that it kind of like validates and valorizes comic book art that doesn't always make it into these kind of high art
yeah.
venues. And
yeah.
and yeah. And especially like people that maybe don't care about comics, maybe this will kind of be an entree for those people.
Very cool. What's is the Carrie Leibowitz show still
Wait.
Up?
No, it's through June 25th. Oh, I should have gone and seen that too. Let's go see it. Maysoon, the other thing about the Jewish Museum that I know we agree on is that why do they have to fucking search you when you come in? You go through the metal detector. I had a backpack full of shit, okay? And like, God bless the guy who was the security officer up there in the front, but he didn't go through my entire backpack. I could have 500 knives in there. Can they just chill out on the whole searching and going through the metal detector?
I wish they could.
So anyhow, Jewish Museum, if you want to give us your public statement on why there needs to be a metal detector. I also went to City Hall yesterday and had to go through that metal detector.
That makes a little more sense to me.
And I'm like, it's the all city I fucking think government. About at that time, I'm just like Harvey Milk.
Right. Dan White.
Yeah, dude. So, but again, they're not going deep dive in this backpack of mine that has like never ending piles of shit in it. I mean, you'd have to take an hour to go through all the crap in my backpack. There's literally 700 pockets on it.
I have to say that metal detector at the Jewish Museum is the one reason why I have only been there twice in the whole time they've been there.
Yeah.
Maybe three times.
Yeah.
Because I find it offensive.
Yeah.
As an Arab, I find it offensive.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm interested in that. In that. And why. And what their agenda is.
Yeah. It'd be curious. I would love to, if they have I'm sure they have a statement or have had to answer that question before and have it sort of readily prepared. Send it to us. Email us your statement.
Okay, if you have any other questions for us, mind puzzles or thought experiments, I love a hypothetical.
I also really like this kind of this dreamscape world. Yeah. If you have any interesting dreams that you want us to unpack for you.
I had a dream about Margaret Tedesco last night. She had a car and she
were you
kept
her
playing
small
Genesis.
Child?
Point is, give us a call, 419-351-6606. You can email us, congratulationspinetree@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at Pine Tree Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
We're back on track.
Back on track.
Back on track. Well, we're slowly back on
still
track.
Trying to get
I feel
those
like we're pretty
in.
Back on track. We got both our microphones.
Yes.
We have the right recording
yes,
thing.
Yes, it's
I'm
actually
not
recording.
On accident.
You're not screaming on acid?
On accident.
We're going to start recording in Kate's studio, I think, next week. Super excited about getting out to RTS and Oakland.
Wow. It's the dawn of it's a official. New age. All right. From the bridge.
To the other bridge.
To the island in between. This has been
Congratulations Pine Tree.
Have you heard? Kate Rhodes has an experimental podcast mini-series coming out on May 3rd. It is part of Tiny Bubbles, an exhibition at the San Francisco Arts Commission Gallery curated by notorious weirdo Stephen Wolf. After Kate has a close encounter with a spontaneously combusting flamingo, she must unlock the secrets of a holographic netherworld with an uncanny resemblance to Zanesville, Ohio. Will she cross the Muskingum River on the Wye Bridge of her own determination, or will she be crushed under the train wheels of uncertainty? Join us every Wednesday from May 3rd to August 16th to find out. Precious Flamingo. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. Love you. Bye.